The Morning Struggle podcast is brought to you by Blue Clover Therapy, a mental health counseling practice in Salt Lake City, Utah. Visit www.blueclovertherapy.com for more information. Blue Clover Therapy, because your mental health deserves a specialist.
Activate.
Welcome to the Morning Struggle podcast, where we take habits of successful people and break them down one at a time into history, science, and action plan so you can implement them into your life and build a better you. Stay tuned.
Do you want to hear what I read on the internet?
I would love to hear what you read on the internet.
So we have this cat problem.
We have a cat problem? Like there's feral cats coming into our house?
No. Well, yes. We just have the one.
Okay.
And during recording, this is a very engaging time for her.
She loves to jump on like the computer screen and do the cat stuff.
Yeah, do all the cat things.
Okay.
So I read on the internet one of the best ways to distract your cat, because you know everybody's on Zoom calls now.
Right.
Is to get a box.
Oh yeah, Zoom calls. Like your cats and dogs have got to be all over your screens.
I've done so much therapy with people's animals there.
Okay, but anyway.
Anyway, you get a box.
Okay.
You put some catnip in the box.
Okay.
And then the cat gets in the box.
And then you close the box.
No.
Makes sense. That's a great article. That's a great article.
No, the cat just stays in the box because cats like boxes anyway.
Oh, okay.
You put the catnip in there and they're sort of a little loopy and they stay in the box.
That's less cool than putting the cat actually in a closed box. But yeah, I mean, that would work too until the cat wants to get out of the box and then you just waste a bunch of catnip. Well, anyway, welcome everybody. Good morning. This is the Morning Struggle Podcast. I'm Ty.
I'm Jesse.
And we bring you Habits of Successful People. And we're on module two.
We are on module two.
So we did Back to Basics. We did four episodes on like what we feel were the core
habits.
Habits. Holy cow. I couldn't even think of habits.
Yep.
I need to get my head together this morning. But now we're doing module two, which is more than money.
More than money. Yep.
So we're talking about money. Money is just such a tangibly easy thing to try to chase. And it is overwhelming for most people.
Well, and whether you have whether you have quite a bit or you don't have enough,
You can have too much money we go over.
Yeah. But It really does affect our mental health,
right?
And how content we actually are,
right?
And so it's a good thing to go over.
We gotta have a good relationship with money. Most people have a good relationship. You look at incredibly wealthy people, and they're not. Some of them are, but a lot aren't really money hungry. They have better purpose than just money.
Yeah,
you know. And so and those are the really successful people. So we're gonna talk about whether you make minimum wage or you make millions or billions of dollars a year, you need to have a good relationship with money and understand it and really utilize it to be successful in your day-to-day life.
Well, and today we're going to go over self-control of money.
Okay, so module two, episode one is self-control with money. We've talked about self-control. We've talked about money. Now we're talking about self-control with money.
Yeah.
We're putting it all together.
Because this is a very specific type of self-control.
Right.
Because we are all on our computers all the time, so we can just click and buy all the things we want.
Right. So this is, we're putting the cat in the box, we're closing the lid, we're wrapping this self-control with money on.
Yeah.
All right, here we go, history.
This day in history.
I searched the annals of academia for my article today.
Was it amazing?
It's brought to you by Liberty Mutual Insurance. You know the one with the emu? I think the emu wrote this article, actually. So here you go. You ready? This is probably history enough, valid enough for our podcast.
Like slightly.
Right. Okay, all right. Here you go. We're going to talk about celebrities who had big bucks and went broke because they didn't have self-control with their money.
Oh, I like this.
It's like right on track. Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny Depp was worth $400 million at his height.
Whoa.
And he once spent $3 million to fire Hunter S. Thompson's ashes out of a cannon. Who's Hunter S. Thomas? And why does Johnny Depp have this guy's ashes? And then why did he fire him out of a cannon?
Is it like
Johnny Depp's a little crazy, I'm not going
to
lie.
Did you have to sign up for that? Or did he buy the cannon, buy the ashes, and then buy the property to shoot his ashes out?
That's a great question. That wasn't in this article, but maybe we should do a whole episode on Johnny Depp.
Yeah, I'm going to need to
know. And his successes. But he filed for bankruptcy, and essentially his manager said, Johnny Depp and Johnny Depp alone is responsible for this. It wasn't bad investments. It wasn't anything. They said he just spent more than he made. And he was making $40 million a movie or whatever it was for Pirates. So anyway, you ready? First one or next one, 50 Cent. Remember the rapper 50 Cent?
50 Cent.
It's your birthday. He's going to come after me
there. Is that the
song? I think so. Back in 2015, Forbes named 50 Cent one of the five wealthiest hip-hop artists.
Whoa.
His net worth was $155 million.
Whoa.
He had a lawsuit because of kind of some a video that got out and then some bad investments.
Was it a sexy video or a violent video?
No, it was a sexy video.
Oh.
And then so he actually filed for Chapter 11 protection in Connecticut. And his debts were noted to be between $10 million and $50 million.
Whoa.
He was in debt that much. They said he had some assets that equaled that. But most of this was like to the IRS as well.
Huh.
And he had to pay back $23 million.
Oh my gosh. Could you imagine like clicking? I guess people don't write checks anymore. But like clicking the button is like, here's all my money.
Here's all my money. There and it's go. Like $23 million.
Gross.
Yeah. Kim Basinger. You remember Kim Basinger?
No.
Oh, man. She was in like 8 Mile. That's kind of like our era movie.
Show me the picture.
Kim Basinger. If you're on.
Oh, yes.
If you're not driving, you should Google her face and you'll be like, oh, I know who she is.
That person.
She was not very good with money either. You ready? Do you remember the movie Boxing Helena?
No.
Nobody does because she reneged on the contract.
Oh.
And then Mainline Pictures sued her. And she was ordered to pay $8.1 million because she didn't do the movie. She also bought a town in Georgia. So her and some other folks bought a town called Braselton, Georgia. Apparently it was lovely and they were going to turn it into like a little bed and breakfast community.
What?
But anyway, she had to sell all that when she got sued.
That's too bad. I want to buy a town. Can I buy Eagle Mountain?
Maybe. We could talk about it.
Whoa,
that paper was loud. Braselton's actually doing pretty good. It's 10,000 people now.
Oh, nice.
Or in 2014. Next one, you ready?
Yes.
Marvin Gaye.
Oh, yeah.
Marvin Gaye's family just got a settlement from Robin Thicke for their song. And didn't Derek For Real or whoever it was. Not Derek For Real. Pharrell Williams.
For real?
Yeah. Anyway, those guys wrote a song.
Yeah.
And Marvin Gaye's family say they stole it from Marvin Gaye because they used like the same drum style.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a big deal, but they did that. I mean, Marvin Gaye, incredibly famous singer, songwriter.
Yeah. Amazing.
Why would they need to do that? Well, Marvin Gaye died broke.
Oh, okay.
Completely broke. He had some drug issues. He was actually shot by his father in 1984.
What?
Yeah. He had an.
Is that how he died?
He died.
Shot
by your dad.
Jeez.
He had unpaid alimony to $600,000, which led him to declare bankruptcy in 1976.
Whoa.
And so to deal with that, he actually gave all the royalties of his next album to his ex. And it had songs like you can leave me, but it's gonna cost you kind of songs.
Yeah.
So he like stuck it to her there.
I like that.
Next one, Mark Twain.
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain. He wrote The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah.
And
that guy.
Ulysses S. Grant memoirs.
Oh.
He was the belle of the ball down in the South of America.
The man.
But let's just say he didn't do too well with his money.
He
invested in a new typesetting machine. It was the technology of the future. It was the Facebook of his time,
late 1800s. It was the MySpace of his time?
It was the MySpace of his time because it didn't do very well. And then, do you guys remember the financial panic of 1893?
Oh, that one, yes.
You remember that financial panic?
Yeah, that was for sure a panic.
It hit him real hard. And then he had to file for bankruptcy at age 60. Could you imagine being 60 and be like, I'm coming up on retirement, and then you got to file for bankruptcy because
that would be rough.
Your typesetting machine doesn't
work.
Look
at this white suit he's wearing, though.
Mark Twain, yeah.
Wow.
Mark Twain, I think he's also the Kentucky Fried Chicken Colonel. So I think they're the same one. Colonel Sanders.
Do you get any benefits from that?
Joe Francis. You know who Joe Francis is?
Nope.
You don't have a lawsuit against Joe Francis?
I don't know.
He's the Girls Gone Wild guy.
So
Joe Francis made his fortune on Girls Gone Wild, but that empire eventually crumbled to the ground.
Yeah,
people were not buying VHS videos anymore, but it's just, and it was a terrible, terrible
and
guy.
It's like, it's underage girls at spring break who are intoxicated.
And he did 2 years in prison for that. So he did,
excellent.
Actually not two, he did a few, it says he did a stint. I don't know what a stint is.
Oh, that could be anything. That could be 2 days or 20 years.
But for two reasons.
Yeah.
One, because he filmed underage girls.
Yep.
But number two, he owed millions of dollars to the IRS. I guess a lot of these people don't pay their taxes. Like, they just make all these millions of dollars and then they buy, like, tigers like Mike Tyson does.
Oh.
Or Nick Cage bites a T-Rex skull. And then they don't pay taxes.
He bought like, a T-Rex skull?
Oh, yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio was bidding on the T-Rex skull, too.
Nice.
We're not going to talk about them, but anyway, okay. He had and then this Joe Francis, he had $2 million gambling debt at Wynn's Casino in Las Vegas.
Jeez.
So then all of a sudden, he's going to prison. He files for bankruptcy in 2013, and because he did that, mm-hmm. Wynn couldn't claim those losses. So if you have a $2 million debt at a casino, just declare bankruptcy.
What kind of life was this man living? I don't know. I think sounds awful.
So you think like these guys are making millions of dollars and they got all this stuff and man, they're living the life. Well, it's so bad that in 2015, Joe Francis got a federal judge to put a warrant on him for failure to turn over two of his luxury cars to his attorneys because he couldn't pay his attorney's fees.
Oh my gosh.
So they were going to repossess two of his cars. Could you imagine?
So his attorney got his cars?
I don't know. I don't know if they ever got him because he lives in Mexico now.
Oh, smart move,
He went down to Mexico. All right, you ready? Three more? Actually, let's just do two more. Aaron Carter. Do you know who Aaron Carter is?
Yeah, he's the brother of the Backstreet Boys. Well, it depends on your generation.
The brother of the Backstreet Boys? I didn't know who Aaron Carter was.
Nick Carter.
He's an American. So Aaron Carter's an American rapper and a teen heartthrob. I didn't know this.
He became kind of popular.
I knew John Carter, the guy who went to Mars and pretty much saved humanity. But yeah. I didn't know Aaron Carter. Apparently, Aaron Carter decided that he didn't want to pay his taxes either.
Oh, dang
it. His managers and his financial planners are probably to blame because they didn't do that for him.
And he was like a baby when he started.
Yeah, he was a minor.
Yeah.
But here you go. So he was $2 million in tax debt. Jeez. That's just tax debt. And so he filed for bankruptcy. And when he filed for bankruptcy, these are all the possessions he had. He had a flat screen TV, a Louis Vuitton backpack, and $917 in his checking account.
That is the total amount of things he had?
That's the total amount of things he had when he filed for bankruptcy.
Oh my gosh.
But he has got a cool sideways hat.
He really does. He's rapping right there.
Yep. And then the last one, I don't know this one either.
Who is it?
Teresa Guidis from The Real Housewives of New Jersey. So just when you look at The Real Housewives, like, oh my gosh, these people have these lavish luxury lives and they have everything they want. Not so much because her and her husband filed for bankruptcy in 2009.
Uh-huh.
But apparently they were hiding some money that they made from the show, from the creditors.
Uh-huh.
So they got arrested for bankruptcy fraud.
Oh.
They ended up going to federal prison. And according to this...
Federal prison?
Yep, federal prison. Whoa. And so she got out in like 2016 and I think her husband's still in there. So when you're thinking about all the luxury life of yachting and fancy New Jersey and condos and mansions, well, you might be going to prison when you're done with that show.
I didn't realize that you could go to federal prison for that.
For tax evasion and bankruptcy fraud?
Yeah, I didn't know that you could go that far.
Money's a federal thing. So when you mess with money, you're messing with a federal thing.
My gosh, that's intense. Well,
all that stems from like wanting so much more out of your limit.
Right, because they were hiding money.
Because they were hiding money, and they're living huge. Like, if you have a $10 million mansion and Lamborghinis, mm-hmm. like, just buy a $5 million mansion and a Maserati. Oh, a Maserati is expensive, too. A Honda Civic, you know? Like, and then you're good, and then you don't go to prison.
And then you don't go to prison.
And then you don't go to prison.
And that's really the key point there. No prison.
Just... if you get nothing else from this show, it's mm-hmm. essentially pay your taxes and don't go to prison.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Done. Sold.
Done and sold. all right. So let's get into the science of self-control with money.
Yep.
So we don't end up like these celebrities. And then we'll do action plan and we'll be great with it.
Easy peasy.
All right. Here we go.
Now, you love Dave Ramsey.
Well, no.
Well,
I like Dave Ramsey. Dave Ramsey's great for beginners.
I thought you had a tattoo of him on your chest or something.
Yeah, I do. But I mean, like, I do on one pack, and then the other pack is like Warren Buffett. And it's like, because I've progressed past Dave.
Oh, wow.
Dave Ramsey's great for like stopping getting into debt. But once you stop that, you need a little bit more.
Oh, that's fair.
So, but I don't dislike Dave Ramsey. I think he's great.
Yeah.
And if you like Dave Ramsey, that's great.
I think that's wonderful. Okay. Anyway, Dave Ramsey says that your house percentage of your income should be about 25%.
Yeah, you should spend about 25% of your income on housing.
Right. So guess what the American population averages out at?
26.
50 to 73%.
50 to 73% of your income? 73%.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah, so it really is not a good idea what Americans are doing for their housing.
Right.
And it's this idea that we have to keep up with the Joneses. So...
Okay.
What's really interesting is that anxiety around money doesn't actually depict how much money you have. So okay. You might not have enough money, like enough to pay your bills.
Sure.
And you might have plenty of money to pay your bills, but just the fact that you have anxiety around that money increases your cortisol. You know, got to bring it up.
Got to bring it up.
Increases your cortisol. That's a stress hormone. That stress hormone creates inflammation in your brain, your entire body, really. But your brain is the big one because all of your cognitive functioning is in your brain. And then we actually get worse with money because our brain is inflated and we're unable to logically think through our financial decisions.
So it doesn't matter if you're rich or poor, if you have anxiety over money, you get a cortisol dump, a chronic cortisol dump, uh-huh. And then you get worse with money.
Yeah. Oh, and it actually gets worse.
Okay.
So it's a very hard thing to correct, actually, because anxiety around money is safety in this society. If you have enough money.
It's your storage of acorns in the tree trunk.
Yes.
You have money, you are going to be safe.
Yeah, you can get through winter, kind of quote-unquote instinctual. So what is going on in the brain with self-control is you have the prefrontal cortex and the brainstem. The brainstem is all the instinctual actions that we do, that flight, fight, freeze specifically. But everything instinctual for us is in that brainstem. So then it directly contrasts the prefrontal cortex, which is regulating all of those things.
Okay.
So that's where you get the judgment of, oh, that's not a bear, that's a rock.
Okay, sure.
Okay. So what's super interesting is that societally, we are in a general social defeat, which is anxiety and bullying, like social bullying. Social defeat is what they called it in these various research studies.
Okay, like because we just have a lot of negative societal communications?
Well, specifically around who has the most acorns.
Oh, okay.
So it's a form of bullying if you are flaunting your money, like keeping up with the Joneses.
Right.
It's a form of bullying. So you got the nice car, you're flaunting it to your neighbors feel less than, they get anxiety because they can't create that situation for themselves.
Oh.
That is social defeat.
So without like actually appearing to be mean or yelling at your neighbor,
uh-huh.
When you buy that new car that you really don't need,
yeah.
You're essentially kind of socially defeating them.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so whenever anybody is feeling social defeat, it actually weakens the connection between the prefrontal cortex and the brainstem.
So then you just go with flight, flight, freeze with no reasoning.
Yes. So you're in a general, quote unquote, fearful state. And when we're in our fearful state, we work completely on instinct.
Okay.
Okay. So we become generally impulsive. We have attention problems, which is a big thing now. Everybody feels like everyone else has attention problems, right? We have less control over our emotions, so we're more likely to have explosive type emotions, and then a huge shutdown because our brain actually can't function with that much emotion for very long, and so it has to shut it down. And typically when we shut it down, so does that prefrontal cortex, which is all of the cognitive rational things that we do.
Okay.
Now the problem with that is that everything that we purchase now, we don't necessarily have to go on an adventure to go get it.
Right. You just go to the store.
You don't even have to go to the store. Well, you go to your computer and you just click through.
You know, people don't even use computers anymore. They just use our phones.
Yeah. You go on Amazon, you buy all the things, and especially in that shutdown state.
Okay.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So basically, if we're going to bring it down to brass tacks, self-control is being able to stop instinctual behavior.
Okay, so our instincts want to gather all the acorns because winter is coming, mm-hmm. and that other squirrel and that other tree has way more acorns than us, and we're worried that we're not going to have enough, even if we do have enough.
Yeah.
And so we need to shut down that instinctual feeling and just rationalize what we truly have.
Well, so it's not just the instinctual feeling, it's the instinctual behaviors behind it.
Okay.
Because what's cool is that the hippocampus, which is the controlling of your emotions,
right.
kind of helps you regulate that, is not part of this prefrontal cortex brainstem system.
Okay.
Okay, so you will still have the emotional pieces of the instinct. So you'll still have that want. You'll still feel like you need that
bag. So you're not getting rid of the emotion. You're getting rid of the behavior behind the emotion.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So what we have to do is we have to get the hippocampus online to be able to regulate the emotion. Because what happens is people can kind of limp through and correct their behaviors, but the emotion behind it, that is really hard, because then when we're at our weak points, you know, like it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you can't go to sleep and you're ruminating on how your neighbor got this really cool outfit.
Right.
You're going to go buy the outfit.
Right.
Okay. So the hippocampus is a little more difficult to exercise, if you will.
Than the hypothalamus?
Than the prefrontal cortex.
The amygdala too. Because the other episode, we were going to exercise our amygdalas.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. But the hippocampus is a hard one to exercise because it's just like emotional regulation.
Well, and specifically around self-control.
Okay.
Because it goes against everything in our body because we want to gather as much as we can.
Okay.
So the best way to exercise the hippocampus in self-control is creating social decision making.
Okay.
And it's specifically the temporal lobes.
Okay.
Mingling with the hippocampus to help regulate this. And it actually bridges the gap between the brainstem and the prefrontal cortex. So everybody starts working together when we're talking about social decision making.
Okay. So a holistic brain thing and all your temporal and lobes, all your lobes start working together.
Yes.
And you're going to tell us how to actually do that, not just by exercising our brain.
Yeah, and I'm going to go more into it in the action plan, but what you need to know right now is when we are considering others in our system, so whether it's our direct family, whether it's our community, that hippocampus goes online, it creates self-control, and then it actually helps out your buddy, the brainstem, to go, no, I'm not going to eat all these berries because I need to share these berries with my neighbors so they don't starve.
Okay, so because you want to kind of steer that emotional action that happens from your hippocampus.
Yes.
Hippocampus. So with that, it's hard because we're on social media now.
Uh-huh.
And it's not just, hey, my neighbor got a brand new car or outfit. It's, hey, this person on the other side of the country, other side of the world is doing something amazing. Like our anxiety around that has got to be huge because we only are going to see people at their tip-top peak.
Yes.
And that's all we're going to see.
Yes.
Well, over and over again every day.
And the real key element of social decision making is that you feel like you're part of like a tribe or a clan.
Okay.
You have a group. When you're on social media, it's very hard to feel groupy.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot
no
of things.
There's no groupies on social media.
Stop.
That's just there's Jesse said it here.
I said it right now. No, but because you could easily step out of your little group, whatever that is, whoever you've invited to your profile or something.
Okay.
You can easily step out and look up the most expensive cars that people post, or like the coolest gardens or
the
whatever
beach
else.
Vacations or whatever you get, or the overlanding vans with the tents on top of
exactly.
them.
Exactly. You know? It's really easy to get into that. And so that's, it actually weakens that hippocampus because we're not making social decisions at that point. We're longing for that.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's a lot in the brain. I don't know what we're going to do with the action plan on this.
It's going to be great.
But then how do you take all that self-control and apply it to like not spending and money?
Oh, I'll tell you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Well, let's get into a quick coffee segment and then let's go over the action plan so we all can be better at controlling our behaviors around money.
I drank pots and pots and pots and pots of strong black coffee trying to keep my sleepy soul awake. But the sleepiness still comes along, and when it does, it's fast and strong. I end up with a bad case of the shakes.
All right. I knew we were going to talk about gathering acorns for the winter.
Oh.
So I decided on the coffee segment, we might have talked about this before in the past, but I decided we're going to talk about the countries that consume the most coffee.
Ooh,
just
I like this.
Straight up. So these are our top 10. You ready?
Yes.
We're going to go. Finland, 12 kilograms.
Yeah.
Norway, 9.9. Iceland, 9. Denmark, 8.7. Netherlands, 8.4. Sweden, Switzerland, Belgium, Luxembourg. And then rounding out number 10 is Canada.
No, wait. We're not even on the list.
We're not even close. We only consume like maybe less than 5 kilograms per person per year.
No kidding.
On average. But coffee is the second most popular drink behind water.
Oh, gosh. I hope people drink water. Please drink water.
So it seems like a lot of those like Scandinavian countries.
Well, they are amazing. They do like after dinner coffee with little pieces of pie and like have you looked this up? Speaking of social media.
You've looked this up on social media.
I have looked this up and I have told you about this.
And that's why.
Cute little cappuccino at dessert.
I know. And that's why we have like 8,000 cappuccino mugs in our house. We got like three or four different ways to make coffee.
Yeah.
And you do Yule log like 200 days out of the year.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be one night. But anyway, whatever.
I read books and drink coffee and have chocolate.
We're very Denmarkian over here. We're about on line with Denmark.
I feel like we're pretty close.
Like with the Danes. But here you go. You ready? So Brazil, we would think, hey, Brazil produces the most coffee in the world. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that before. They don't actually drink a lot of the coffee.
Yeah, you want to know why?
Why?
Because they're producing the drug.
The drug when you're producing the drug. Yeah. You don't drink your own product.
Yeah.
I mean, you get your arm chopped off for something like that.
That's ridiculous.
So Brazil doesn't actually drink all that much coffee. Oh. Italy. You would say, oh, well, Italy, they're always drinking their cappuccinos in their cafes. Yeah. And then they're yelling at the people down in their little Fiats.
Yeah.
on the road.
That is the most stereotypical.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but they don't drink a ton of coffee because they do a lot of like espresso type drinks.
So they
use a little bit of coffee ground, not as much. And then they sip it in their little tiny cups and they put their pinky
so
up and they say, where is my macchiato? And then
that is classy.
And they say, Benicio.
For a guy who's Italian, you're sure. Putting them into a stereotype.
I'm really not Italian.
You're Italian.
I'm like an eighth Italian or a 16th or a 64th.
I'm going to tell your mom.
Colombia, same thing. Yeah. So Colombia is one of the best coffees that they can produce.
Yeah.
And they maybe drink it in the morning with milk as like a latte. But that's kind of it.
That's kind of their way of doing it?
Yep.
Huh.
And that's it. So Finland, though. Let's talk about Finland real quick.
Yeah.
So Finland was number one. They were amazing. Finnish women, 14% of Finnish men and 6% of Finnish women drink more than 10 cups of coffee per day. They average 4 to 5. That's everybody across the board in Finland. They're just drinking
like
coffees
babies.
And doing hot saunas. That's it. But they are at the tippity top of the world.
Yeah.
So it's cold there all the
time. Yeah, you got to have coffee there.
You got to drink coffee.
I drink coffee to the shaky point quite often, more than I should.
10 cups of coffee. That's a whole pot of coffee.
That is, I can do it. So, I can do it.
Anyway.
I think I can do
it. Hats off to the Finns. They know their stuff.
I think I can do it.
So anyway, okay, so let's get off of coffee segment. Let's get back on action plan and let's talk about self-control with money.
Let's hope you make the most of it, my boy.
So our top barriers tend to be that we are too emotional with money and we're too focused on money.
Okay.
Because any amount of focus, whether it's I want more or I don't have enough, creates that anxiety. So it's going to create emotions in us and that's very difficult to control.
Okay.
Second, increased anxiety and increased stress around it. Obviously, it's another scarcity mindset of creating a lot of emotion around it.
All right.
And then the third barrier is actually interesting. You don't have any allies or partners or people to help you understand your money.
Okay.
I know that this is a big one for me. Like, I don't understand anything with money. I don't understand retirement. Like, I could. I don't really want to.
You don't want to.
Yeah. And so I have you for that, and that's lovely. But if for some reason you weren't around, I would have a difficult time, and I'd have to figure that out, which would create emotion for me, which would create barriers to me being most successful with self-control.
Okay. So these are all the barriers. This is what's stopping you from being successful
with
self-control.
The top three. There's a ton of them. But
Okay,
so first I want you to assess where you're at financially and if you need to reach out to better understand it in a logical manner.
Okay, so find out where your finances stand.
Yeah.
You know, how much money you have coming in, how much money you have coming out,
right.
What your assets are, what your liabilities are. That's what you owe, like your debt versus what you have. And then like reach out to like maybe a financial planner or a tax advisor or an uncle who's really good with money.
Yes. And, the reason why we're having some sort of outside source is so you can stay very logical. Specifically, if it's a very emotional piece for you,
right.
You need to have that other person to be like, no, these are just numbers. We're looking at the numbers. This is how we get from A to Z is this very logical version.
And everybody always wants to have more of the money. So it's also probably pretty nice to talk to somebody about actual fact.
Yeah.
Instead of like, yeah, I've got all this money. And then you talk to somebody and they're like, no, you don't. You can't buy that 18th pair of shoes.
Yeah. And just to be clear, honestly, most people don't have as much money as they say they're having because we go through our money pretty quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we want our outside person. Create a general goal for yourself that's long term. And this is actually where I want you to elicit emotion. And I want it to be a positive emotion, obviously. But whether it's going and taking the kids on vacation or the grandkids on vacation or donating to a certain charity or whatever that is, some sort of warm, fuzzy feeling of some kind.
I want to be the 80-year-old dude with like a ripped 6-pack, 8-pack abs.
Yeah.
That's what I want. Uh-huh. Like I don't need millions of dollars. If you're like the 80-year-old dude who's all buff, we got a buff runner guy. He's got to be 100 years old.
Amazing.
In Eagle Mountain. He's amazing.
Yeah.
But he's like super ripped, way more cut than I am. And
yeah.
I was like, and he looks like, you know, Grandfather Christmas with like the white beard that goes
and
down
his
waist.
And it's like flowing behind him.
And
he looks majestic. Like it is, he runs no matter what.
And he's probably got millions of dollars too. I mean, he's everything. But I'd much rather have that than be unhealthy and have all the money in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So we want to create this emotion because you're going to have emotions around money because we're human beings. So we want to try to slide in that positive emotion. So when we start getting, you know, we see our neighbor with the new car and we start getting that social defeat going on, we can go, no. Channel that warm fuzzy of being Grandfather Christmas running in the snow.
Santa Claus with abs.
Yeah, Santa Claus with abs.
Okay.
And then it's like, no, this is why I'm doing this.
Okay.
So it brings it back into a positive emotion. So it elicits that hippocampus while having some sort of global, like, social decision making. So it's like, oh, no, I don't need a new car.
And it might also be nice just to recognize that it's social defeat feeling, not because sometimes we have those emotions and we don't know what they are and we let them overtake us. But if we say, oh my gosh, I am going on a spending spree or I'm about to go on a spending spree, I'm just having social defeat.
Yeah.
And then you can actually assess and be like, do I have enough acorns for the winter?
Yeah.
You know, and like, okay, I am good. So I guess you're just recognizing that that's the emotion that you're having.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it is very powerful.
Right.
So be kind to yourself as you go through this. Have a buddy and a regular buddy. So like maybe you talk to your uncle once to kind of get all your finances organized. Get like a tax guy. I actually don't know what they're called. What's the guy?
CPA.
CPA.
Okay.
Get a CPA or get maybe visit your uncle on a regular basis because this is something that you're going to have to like reassess every time you get a raise, every time you decide to do something new or get a new hobby, whatever, you need to reassess this with your buddy. And the cool thing about having some sort of buddy is that when you have that social defeat or you're feeling distressed, that you can talk to them and they can logically talk you out of it.
Because they're not having that emotional response.
Yeah.
Like when you say, oh, my buddy bought a Tesla, I need a Tesla. And they're like, well, is your car okay? Like, are you doing it for the sustainability stuff? Or like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Instead of they're like, oh, you need one, I need one. And then
we all need one.
Yeah. You go crazy. That person can be they kind of like that bridge to your prefrontal cortex.
Yeah, it kind of stops you just a smidge.
Okay.
And it also reduces stress because then we don't feel alone. And when anytime you reduce stress, you reduce your cortisol, which reduces inflammation in the brain, which makes you more capable to have logical thought.
Okay, so
cool.
So relax, reduce that anxiety, reduce that cortisol.
Yes. Set yourself up for success. Make sure you eat enough. Like, I know it sounds silly, but like, make sure you have enough glucose in your body.
Okay.
Because any type of logical functioning that is outside of your brainstem takes a lot of glucose.
Okay.
So making sure that you eat enough.
Or you have ketones.
Or you have ketones.
Because some people are in
ketosis. Yeah, whichever.
Just have enough nutrients.
Enough nutrients. Give yourself a break. Know your coping skills. Sleep.
So self-care.
Yeah.
Self-care is very important to stay out of your emotional brain.
Yes.
Okay.
And then last thing, and this is the most important and the hardest to do, is to find your happy now.
Ugh.
I know.
Nobody's happy now.
I will be happy when.
We're in a capitalist consumer society. Nobody's happy.
Well, and that's exactly it. Because yes, I want to take the grandkids on a really cool vacation when I'm 65 or 70, right?
Right.
But that's not going to make me any more happier than now unless I figure out what makes me happy.
Okay.
So it's finding little moments of happy, and no, you don't have the Tesla, and no, your house isn't as big as so-and-so's or whatever,
right.
But you like your little house, and you like your little spark car that can't go over 60 miles an hour.
It can. It shakes too much. That's okay. That's okay.
Right? Right? Because it's finding these little moments that you are okay with here. And by doing that, it just makes the world a much better place for you. And you're much more likely to be a logical human being for these very emotional topics like money.
Right. And if you do want more money, just thinking about or coveting money, it's not going to get you more money.
No.
You've got to actually use some successful habits, some of the ones we've talked about, mm-hmm. to actually improve your skill. And yeah. then usually when you do that and you chase professions and dreams that are lucrative, that do bring in money,
right.
you're very successful at it, not because it pays a lot, but because you love that job.
Right.
You know, you learn and you become an expert in that area because you love it. And that's the money is secondary, yeah. I've noticed, to a lot of those things.
Absolutely. Well, because if you have the emotion and the passion behind it, you are really good at it.
Right.
But if you're just doing it for the paycheck will never be big enough for long.
Right.
Right? You're going to need...
The paycheck alone will never be big enough. Whether you're making $10,000 or $10 million, yep. as we've seen with the celebrities, it'll never be big enough if yep. that's the reason you're doing it.
Exactly.
Okay. So self-control with money. You need to go do an assessment. You need to go find an external person to mm-hmm. help you with that assessment. You need to find a buddy, right?
And it can be your partner, in a relationship, as long as that person can stay logical.
Okay.
Okay.
It makes sense. And then go through all your steps mm-hmm. and just realize that it's social defeat. That's yeah. the feeling yeah. you're feeling right here when you want to go just spend. It's just social defeat. So figure out a way to bridge or to stop that emotion from taking over your prefrontal cortex.
Yep.
Have a buddy to help you out with that. And then you can essentially make good money decisions, mm-hmm. which will lead to better money decisions, which will lead to decreased anxiety, which will lower your cortisol, which will de-inflame your brain,
yeah.
which will essentially, self-control is one of those things where when you can master self-control, that's when the contentment and the happiness really comes into the life, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so get out there. This is four-part money. So this is part one. We're going to talk about four on money. In the next module, we're going to get into relationships and start doing all these different ones and kind of like blocks. We can take little chunks of our lives and make them better.
Yes.
All right. Well, so everybody, us as included, uh-huh. we're going to go out there and
build a better you.
All right. Thanks, guys.